जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपीजना वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीरावन चारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीरावन चारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी।
जय विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमद हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्री प्रभुपाद की जय। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरांगा। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 4 चैप्टर 28, पुरांजना बिकम्स अ वुमन इन द नेक्स्ट लाइफ टेक्स्ट। सत्वं विहाय मां बंधो गतो ग्राम्यमतिर्महिं, विचरन् पदम् अद्राक्षी कयाचिन्निर्मितं स्त्रिया, सत्वं विहाय मां बंधो गतो ग्राम्यमतिर्महिं, विचरन् पदम् अद्राक्षी कयाचिन्निर्मितं स्त्रिया। Ladies, please. Saha, that swan, Tvam, yourself, Vihaya, leaving, Mam, me, Bandho, O friend, Gataha, went, Gramya, material, Matihi, whose consciousness, Mahim, to earth, Vicharan, traveling, Padam, position, Adrakshi, you saw, Kayachit, by someone, Nirmitam, manufactured, Striya, by a woman. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. My dear friend, you are now my very same friend. Since you left me, you have become more and more materialistic. And not seeing me, you have been traveling in different forms throughout this material world, which was created by some woman. Purport. When the living entity falls down, he goes into the material world, which was created by the external energy of the Lord. This external energy is described herein as some woman or Prakriti. This material world is composed of material elements, ingredients supplied by the Mahat Tattva, the total material energy. The material world created by this external energy becomes the so-called home of the conditioned soul. Within this material world, the conditioned soul accepts different apartments or different bodily forms and then travels about. Sometimes it travels in the higher planetary systems and sometimes in the lower systems. Sometimes it travels in higher species of life and sometimes in lower species. He has been wandering within this material universe since time immemorial. As explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jiva Guru Krishna Prasade Paya Bhakti Lata Bija Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 19.151. The living entity wanders into many species of life, but he is fortunate when he once again meets his friend, either in person or through his representative. Actually, it is Krishna who personally advises all living entities to return home back to Godhead. Sometimes Krishna sends his representative who, delivering Krishna's very message, canvasses all living entities to return home back to Godhead. Unfortunately, the living entity is so greatly attached to material enjoyment that he does not take the instructions of Krishna or his representative very seriously. This material tendency is mentioned in this verse as gramya mati, or sense gratification. The word mahim means within this material world. All living entities within this material world are sensually inclined. Consequently, they become entangled in different types of bodies and suffer the pangs of material existence. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahim Dadati Svapadantikam Vancha Kalpatruvyascha Kripasindhubya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivastadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The whole material energy or cosmos is a very intricate, highly sophisticated machinery that is built or works according to the operator. So we have that experience. I mean, this verse in purport is a very good explanation of the theory of karma. It's an explanation of why there is so much variety, why people experience happiness and distress in this material world. So this complex machinery is explained in the Bhagavad Gita as yantra, yantra rudhani mayaya. This machinery works according to the consciousness of the operator or the interactor actually. So each one of us is a living entity, a conscious living being. And depending on how we interact with this material world, it responds back to us. And that response includes not only the workings of it, but also consequences of working it. So for example, let's simplify it and take the very simplistic machine called a pair of scissors. Okay. A pair of scissors has a very specific function to cut paper, let's say. Now when I use the pair of scissors for its actual purpose, I get benefit from it. I can cut paper into different shapes and sizes and forms. But I also have the freedom, if you will, to use the pair of scissors as a lawnmower. It can cut grass too. But if I cut or if I mow my lawn with a pair of scissors, what's the outcome? I can get, you know, short grass, but it's going to take one forever. And second is I'm going to have a severe, you know, shoulder pain. Because I've used that instrument not in its real purpose, or not for its real purpose. So now, let's complicate the simple machinery, you know, to the, as they say in engineering, nth degree, meaning to make it extremely complicated machinery. And in this extremely complicated machinery, There are so many different moving parts, so many different pieces that interact with us. This material world is like that. Very complex machinery. And within this very complex machinery, every piece, every part, everything, including the whole machinery, has a particular utility. And one should know how to utilize it. Otherwise, one gets a shoulder pain, heartache, or another body actually. So one should know how to interact with this material world. If one does not know, if one does not understand that how should I interact with this material world, then there is a default consciousness or a default understanding. The default understanding is that whatever I see is meant for me. And it is up for grabs. Whoever sees it, finders keepers. And I have certain facilities that I feel I can utilize to maximize my experience within this complex machinery. That may be, you know, high birth or so-called great education, or bodily beauty, bodily strength, excellent intellectual capacity. And by these faculties or facilities, I extract the most from this, or I attempt to extract the most from this complex machinery. So in this verse, that kind of consciousness is called gramyamati, materialistic, sense gratificatory consciousness. That this material world is meant for my exploitation. It is meant for my enjoyment. And I can justify it because, look, I have eyes, nose, ears, tongue, skin, hands and legs, and the other working senses, genitals and all that. And these allow me to experience the material world. So what's wrong with that? If interacting with the material world in this way was wrong, why do I have them in the first place? Why did the Creator, why did God give me eyes, nose, ears, tongue and all of that, and then tell me, hey, don't use them for sense gratification? This doesn't make sense. So rational thinking, which we all love, rational thinking says, I have senses, there are sense objects, this material world, so hey, go right ahead. However, there are consequences for that go right ahead behavior. The consequences is that one does not know, or one should know, how to interact with that machinery. This is called the Vedas, or scripture, or body of knowledge, plus the super soul. So here super soul is speaking to this lost soul, that you are my very same friend who has been lost since time immemorial. You have been lost because your consciousness has become materialistic. So Krishna is giving us both the cause and indirectly the remedy. The cause is that my consciousness has become materialistic. That means I have taken my attention away from Krishna and absorbed it in sense gratification or in enjoying the fruits of this machinery or the outcome of this, utilizing this machinery. This is called materialistic consciousness. So hidden within this is the remedy. The remedy is to remove my consciousness from here and place it back in my relationship with God. Vicharan Padam Adrakshi. And he says, as you've seen that this whole machine was built by a woman. And that is the external energy of Krishna, Maya Devi. Maya Devi is one of the best manufacturers. Her manufacturing is so amazing that it is very attractive. It is not only attractive, but it is also designed to keep our attention. Generally, we have come to understand that the normal human being has a very short attention span. For example, the human brain cannot accommodate more than 7 things at a time, at best. For a person who has good attentive skill, they can capture 7 concepts simultaneously. Most people cannot. At best, 1 or 2. This is why there are so many advertisements that are repeated. Because if they just show us one ad one time and they ask us, do you recall an ad for soda? No. So they have to show it multiple times. It's called impressions. And they keep showing it multiple times and they ask you, do you recall seeing an ad for a soda? Yeah. Do you remember what flavor it was? Then they will say 30% of people remember. So that's your effectiveness of your advertising. Because people's attention drifts very quickly. And when it is even less than that, it is called attention deficiency. I mean, that's the nature of whole of Kali Yuga. There is a deficiency of attention. There is a plethora of inattention. However, to keep the attention, there has to be something that's exciting constantly. So Maya, or this illusory material world, is an expert at presenting very, very new things for us to keep our attention. And interestingly, those new things are not really exciting all the time. They're the same problems repeating again and again also. And our attention is still there. It may be new exciting things, new gadgets, new something, new understanding of the material world, new courses and degrees, new research. All it's the same problems just packaged in new different methods or different ways. To keep our attention within this world is called Gramyamati. Gramyamati, in a very, let's say, in a very simplistic method, a simplistic example, one piece of gossip that, let's say, somebody did something or said something. How many times is that little piece of gossip circulated and recycled? Hundreds of times. In fact, even if 10 years have passed, we refer to that same piece of gossip. Did you know? 10 years ago. So she's very good with giving us the same bit of information again and again. It keeps our attention. Yeah? And the consciousness becomes so colored that one doesn't think that there is an alternative. This is the other. I mean, I'm using language differently. Said directly, Maya has two potencies called Avarnatmika Shakti and Prakshepatmika Shakti. The potency to attract us or throw us into illusion and keep us in illusion. And even if we consider, hey, perhaps there must be an alternative to all of this, then Maya says, don't waste your time. No, this is not for you. And the agents of Maya appear in different ways. They appear as material duties. Hey, shouldn't you be doing that instead? They appear as uncooperative friends and relatives who take our attention away from the real alternative. or they appear as allurements of money, name, fame. It also appears, the Maya also appears as weakening of faith. Because the whole Maya potency is working in a direction quite opposite of Krishna's internal potency. So it's a constant strife. And within this is caught the living entity. Now, think of it as a jukebox or something else. That's a complex machine. And it's just sitting there. Or a computer. Jukebox is a better example, just because it has more visual to it. The jukebox will not start until you put a quarter in it. Right? So this material world actually interacts with us when we have made a decision that yes, I want to do something with this material world, and I drop the quarter. All the lights turn on. And these beautiful color lights go on, little music comes up, and then it says, select your song. And we select our song, and that plays. And we stand there, either with the headphones or something, and we are now enamored. So that dropping of the quarter is tantamount to or parallel to we thinking that there is value in this material world, that I am going to benefit from this material world in some way, and we drop the quarter. Then this beautiful, you know, set of lights twinkling and all these noises and sounds and music and a plethora of choice, genre of music is available. Do you want blues? You want R&B? You want rock and roll? You want, what do you want? Whatever you want, it's available. Just press a button. Available. It's called entertainment on demand. All you have to do is press a button. We've taken care of all of the different, you know, arrangements behind it. All you have to do is press a button and voila, it's there for you. In any choice that you would like. How nice. And that's how the consciousness becomes completely enamored by the material energy. And in this machinery there are consequences. That's the Brahmanda Brahmite. The consequence of playing with the material energy is that it gives us another body. It encourages our material desires, actually. The material world encourages us to have varieties of material desires because there are allurements. For example, there is a company that is selling one-way tickets to space. There is the International Space Station, and they want to populate people in the International Space Station or whatever that is. So they're selling a one-way ticket that they'll shoot you into space and drop you there and you have to live there. $100,000 or $1 million ticket. And people want it. For example. Or something else, you know, just take whatever variety. So when we want these allurements or we go for these allurements, then to make the maximum out of those allurements, we need to change our bodies. So the material energy says, don't worry, I made that arrangement also for you. Whatever body you like, 8,400,000 species available. Just press a button, you got it. But the foolish living entity does not consider the consequences of his or her actions and thinks of it as a nice game. Or at best, that who knows? I mean, that the worst cop-out statement is, who knows? Who knows whether there is another life or not? That's the justification for doing anything right now. Who knows? Just because I don't know doesn't mean it doesn't exist. But that's my rationale. Who knows? And even if you give an explanation, it doesn't make sense. Come on. Nobody knows, right? Have you seen anyone who remembers their previous lives? Do you know anyone who's seen their next life? These are our cop-out statements. Because the moment we agree with that statement that there is a next life and there are consequences, it immediately calls us to become more responsible with how we talk and behave. And people don't want to be responsible in general. Because in the present age of Kali Yuga, irresponsibility is enjoyment. In the previous ages, responsibility was considered enjoyment. When you were responsible, you could enjoy more. That is still the case though. But the current way of thinking is, the more irresponsible you are, the more enjoyment there is. Yeah? I mean, we've come up with so many games and sports that encourage irresponsible behavior. We've come up with so many foods and drinks that encourage irresponsible behavior. We've come up with so many careers that encourage irresponsible behavior. Like that. So then, one gets either an upgrade in the form of body or a downgrade. But within this universe, Brahmanda Brahmite, one is upgraded to a higher statuses or planets of existence or lower planets of existence in different forms of body. Merry-go-round? Is that what it's called? Merry-go-round? Carousel, that's right. So that's used to describe how karma works. The carousel goes round and round and a little up and down. You sit on these nice horses, you wave to people, goes up and down, round and round. So the karmic cycle works like that. By our karmic behavior, we either go up in the material universe or down. And round and round across the different species of life. Aquatics, birds, reptiles, insects, animals, human being, or kind of progression. And at the human form of life, you can either go to higher existence, urdhvam gacchanti sattvastha, madhye tishtanti rajasah. If one is driven by the mode of passion, one will be reborn within the human species, adho gacchanti tamasa. And by the mode of ignorance, one goes down to lower forms of life. It's the same living entity who is the dear friend of Paramatma, lost in a body. And that body is not just a covering, the body makes one forget one's real identity and makes him think he is that body. So a Sachidananda soul thinks, I am a hog, I am a dog, I am a bird, I am a human being, or whatever it is, and wanders within the universe. So Krishna has remedies, a remedy for this disease, Krishna's representatives. And Prabhupada says, unfortunately, the living entity is so greatly attached to material enjoyment that he does not take the instructions of Krishna or his representative very seriously. When one has a disease, and if one doesn't take the physician's prescription seriously, one will not recover from the disease. In fact, the disease becomes worse. So it's important to follow prescription. So there is a disease. The disease is called the material disease. The disease of being attracted to something outside of our relationship with Krishna. And the cure for that disease is given by Krishna himself or his representatives. But people don't want it. They don't want it because they cannot think of a healthy life. They are so conditioned into thinking that diseased life is actual life. When, for example, if you were to say to people, this is suffering, then they will say, look around. Everyone is suffering. So why should I do something different? Everyone is suffering. So the answer is, just because everyone is suffering, that does not make my suffering abnormal or normal. It doesn't make my suffering normal. Yeah, everyone's suffering. So that's the nature of the world. It's part of the world. Everyone suffers, or everyone, this is what everyone goes through. In fact, we call it, this is life. Hey, this is life. You get something, you lose something. This is life. Why change it? Because in our experience, everyone has this. So then Krishna's representatives have to come to show us that that's not the case. There is an alternative. There is an alternative lifestyle based on an alternative consciousness. That is not called Gramyamati. And Prabhupada gives us the reason. In this material world, everyone is very sensually inclined. So, the idea that happiness lies in the contact of the senses with the sense objects. This is called sensually inclined. And that sensual inclination is so intense that they will go through anything to have that experience of the senses coming in contact with the sense objects. Even if there are dire consequences of it, to it. So our shastras give examples. The fish. The fish has a voracious tongue that the moment you drop a little worm in water, the fish will just swim straight to it. So in fishing, there is a hook, and the hook is attached to a worm. And the fish only sees the worm, it does not see the hook. Because the moment he sees the worm, I gotta get it. And he swims fast, opens his mouth, and gets the worm. What happens? The hook goes right through his palate. And that's the end of the fish. Because the fish is so sensually inclined to satisfy the tongue that the nice metal hook that is right there cannot see it. Another example is that of deer. That the deer is enamored by sweet sound. So in the past, the hunters would play music or make some sound, and the deer would get, the ears would turn like that, completely focused, and wouldn't move from there. And that was perfect target for the hunters. Because if it's a moving target, it's a little difficult to get. So by the sense of sound, the deer would not move, even if it's dangerous for it. Or the sense of touch. A massive animal like an elephant who can knock down trees is captured simply by someone when they bring a she elephant and rub her skin against his skin. I mean, imagine, the elephant is called a pachyderm because the fellow has like thick skin. And on thick skin, even if you throw a stone, it doesn't really matter to an elephant so much. But the moment a she-elephant rubs a little against him, he gets maddened. And he follows her. And they nicely take the she-elephant and guide the fellow to a pit. And when he falls into the ditch, they keep him there. And a nice strong elephant has now become domesticated. Just from that little rub of the skin, and he wants more of it, so he wants to rub his skin against the she elephant. And there are examples for the sense of taste and sense of smell, etc. I'm just cutting it down for sake of time. the human being, the difference in the human being is that all these five senses are very active. In the elephant, you know, the sense of touch is what is the most dangerous one. In the fish, it's the sense of taste. But in the human being, all these five are there. So the human life is more precarious in that sense. So one should be very careful, thoughtful, conscientious of how they engage themselves with this complex machinery. So Prabhupada's teaching is, for all practical purposes, better to be cautious. And only under guidance and training can one operate this machinery. Otherwise, finished. One of the things Prabhupada said is that you people, like Prabhupada would say, you people, you flirt with Maya too much. Or said differently, we take risks. We risk playing with the material energy, pushing the envelope, as they say. We push the boundaries with her. Let's see how far I can go before she can catch me. That very thinking itself means we've been caught by her. It's the allurement. So better to be cautious and say no thank you than to say, I've been chanting Hare Krishna for a few weeks. I can play with her a little bit and, you know, nothing will happen. And we use the excuse, Yukta Vairagya. I know how to engage things in Krishna's service now. I've read Nectar of Instruction. And before we know, we are engaged by the material energy. Like Jai Jagannath Prabhu says, instead of Yukta Vairagya, we're completely Yukta. And our Vairagya is towards Krishna. We have renounced Krishna. So material energy is a very, very dangerous, risky machinery. Without proper training in spiritual cultivation, one should not play with the material energy. One should not interact with her without knowing the utility. Now, the interesting piece is that our scriptures don't say, yeah, you should give up material energy. They don't say, alright, just withdraw. They say, you should learn how to interact with her. Because it's important, we are still in this world. We should learn to interact with the material energy. And we should do it only to the extent of our spiritual capacity. If we don't have spiritual capacity, we should not try. Withdrawing from the material energy is not an option either. Right? Especially followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because Prahlad Maharaj says, you know, Prayena Deva Munaya. There are many so-called spiritualists who completely withdraw themselves from this material world because they are only interested in their own salvation. Maunam Charanti Vijane. Vijane means without anyone else, in solitude. Maunam Charanti, they just keep quiet, they recede into solitude, and they are thinking about their own salvation or their own going back to Godhead program. They are na pararthanishta. They are not interested in the benefit or welfare of others. So as followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, while we are cultivating our own exit from the material machinery, the call to action is to also extend a hand to assist others to do so. Now that requires to be properly trained and knowledgeable of how material energy works, to what degree I can assist. The expert here says Krishna's representatives, they go right in and they know how to extricate people out of the difficult condition. Others may not be, but still everyone should. Janma sarthak kari kar para upkar. Then one's consciousness is not gramya, it is the other. It's absorbed in Krishna's service. So those are some thoughts. Any comments you'd like to add? Yeah, Prabhu.
Thank you for class.
Could you speak into the mic, please?
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
What about a sannyasi who's who's just renounced and has given up the world? How do they interact with the world?
Are they?
How do they interact with the material?
In Kali Yuga, sannyas is banned. You're not supposed to take sannyas in Kali Yuga. Right? There are five things not to do in Kali Yuga. Ashwamedham gavalambam. Palapaitrakam, meaning offering meat to departed forefathers. Sannyasam, should not take sannyas. And Devaraina Sutotpattim, one should not conceive a child through the brother-in-law. Which means in the previous ages, in a case of emergency, it was allowed. In Kali Yuga, people take sannyas as a cop-out. It's a cop-out program, not the devotees. I'm coming to that. A general sannyas means, oh, the material world is too difficult. Oh, there's so much problems associated with it. I'm heading out of this thing. This is not for me. What will you do? I'll beg and whatever. Beg and stay at a temple and something. But I don't want to interact with the material energy because it's too difficult. I'm just going to drop all my responsibilities. So the Shastra says that one should not be a sannyasi like that. One should properly purify oneself. And then, sannyas is taken with a very specific commitment to be within this material energy to help others. That is the real sannyas. Otherwise, Shastra does not allow. Sannyas as a freeloader program is not allowed. Sannyas as a cop-out program is not allowed. Because there is consequences for it. Consequences is, without proper purification, such a so-called immature sannyasi will cause more havoc for himself and others. So proper purification is necessary. So you see what Prabhupada did. Young men made them sannyasis and didn't allow them to just settle, travel. He said, you should not be in any place more than 2 days. Keep traveling. Traveling and preaching. And that was their strength. Of course, Prabhupada's situation was there was an emergency. Yet, that was their strength. So immature sannyas is risky. Renunciation with proper understanding of duty and proper understanding of responsibility within this world? Yes. Okay. I say it even differently. We have a tendency, because our mind works in binary. Right? For example, here's how binaries work, right? Let's say Dvijamani Gaura Prabhu and I have a problem. And I hope not, but something. And if there is an issue in our relationship, my first response is, all right, I'm not going to talk to Dvijamani anymore. It's either a one or a zero. Because that's how we think, that's how we operate. There is actually a proper solution. Dvijamani Prabhu, this is something that's bothering me. Let me see how we can work it out. So how we interact with the material world is also, oh, this is problematic. I'm exiting from here. I'm not, anyway, I don't want to put a disclaimer. Is that okay? I was going to put a disclaimer, but I will not. Yes, because I'm anticipating perhaps a question or a thought on it.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Bol.
So, this point that we are not misers, that we are, you know, in the movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we should be participating in this, the spreading love of God, not that we're going off to do our own worship and things like that. But then there's the point that you cannot give what you do not have.
Right.
So, how does that fit in? You know, we're not experiencing, those of us who are not experiencing love of God cannot give love of God. So, what is the real, what real compassion work can we do until we actually experience something substantial?
Correct. And we cannot. And those who do, they create problems for themselves and others. However, the call to action is not to wait until love of God has manifested. The call to action actually is to assist. Etava janma safalyam dehinam iha dehishu praner arter dhya vacha shreya acharanam sada. Krishna is actually glorifying the trees as he's walking with Balaram. He's glorifying these wonderful trees who are rendering such wonderful service. The message to us is that one should cultivate higher order, shreya, the ultimate benefit of life. And how you do it is through prana. You give your life to it. If you're unable to give your life, you give your wealth, because that is as valuable as life. Or dhya, your intelligence, or words. So we may not have love of Godhead in our heart, but we have some realization of something transcendental. The realization may be as simple as, wow, I really like the mode of goodness lifestyle, let's say. Maybe that's our realization. And that can be shared. That I see the devotees have a very nice, regulated, sattvic lifestyle. And they are happy. And I'm happy. That's what I have and that's what I can give. As my realization grows, I have more to give. The more I receive, the more I can give. But it's not just that I keep receiving and I don't give. And give doesn't have to be to a stranger. Give can be with whoever. But giving must be there, sharing must be there, expressing must be there.
And what is the real motivation or purpose of
service?
That?
Service. The motivation for whatever we do is service. A higher motivation is Krishna's pleasure, like we were hearing last night. He made the comment, Jai Jagannath Prabhu made the comment. It's Krishna's pleasure. Krishna says, worship a rock, we'll worship a rock. Krishna's pleasure. So Krishna is describing, this is very pleasing to me. Okay. And I want to see Krishna pleased. Therefore I do it. Or it's service, as we say. It's a service. Krishna would like this service of me. And anyone else? Ladini Shakti Mataji and Acharya Nishtha.
You were speaking about interacting with the material nature.
Yeah.
And I wanted to know, how does one know when it's, when one's...
gone too far?
I want to know, when is it an actual limitation or a made-up limitation?
Made-up what? Limitation?
How does one measure oneself that I'm actually limited or I'm limiting myself?
Well, if I'm playing with fire, how do I know what's my capacity? Where's my limit to play with fire? I get a little burned, right? I mean, if someone tries to cook like Vishwakarma Prabhu, for example, you know, big pots, big fire, and nothing burns. Well, he's going to be cooking for 1,200 people in a few days. And he will do it literally without breaking a sweat. Of course, I mean, just because it's hot, but you know, he walks in the kitchen, cool, calm, very composed, and you know, stirring this, stirring that. One item after another, I've never seen Vishwakarma Prabhu shout or panic in the kitchen. I've never seen him. 12 years going. I haven't seen him only for 12 years. I'm sure he's been cooking for many, many years. Especially in our kitchen, the pots are all, you know, oddly shaped, and you know, some have flat bottoms and some have, you know, very thin metal. Everything burns in that. But he is able to do it without burning anything and without really panicking. You put a new bhakta, can you please cook and see what they do? The capacity is not there. They'll burn their hand, they'll have little marks of, you know, the oven burnt here or finger got chopped off with the cabbage or... just not the capacity, not there. So there is, we get reaction back that tells you, oh, this is not for you. But that's called learning it the hard way, yeah, the school of hard knocks. The better way is through guided, you know, the guru or whoever will guide and say, do this much, this is enough, don't do more than this. How do we know our capacity? We ask. We consult. We have some sense of our own capacity. For example, if someone were to tell us, you know, start a sampradaya. Hopefully no one will tell us to start a sampradaya, but something like, you know, go out and do some preaching in Timbuktu. If the guru feels the capacity is there, even if it's in a seed form, that empowerment will be there. Now there's a very interesting picture. Even for a person who has no capacity, genuinely no capacity, the guru's instruction can empower them to manifest unlimited capacity. If they can take that instruction very deeply in the heart. So in one sense, there is no capacity issue. In another sense, there is a capacity issue. And so the instructions are given according to capacity, sometimes usually a little bit outside of capacity, to help the disciple cultivate faith in the words of the guru. Because as soon as we get an instruction, the first thought is, how am I going to do this? And then for a strong devotee, the thought will be, if my guru has empowered me to do so, anything can manifest. Let me connect with that instruction, and capacity manifests. Yeah? Acharya Nishtha Prabhu? Oh, he'd gone. Oh, he's here. Final question, we'll stop.
Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you, Prabhu. On the topic of, yeah, interacting with the material energy safely, it seems that the primary method that Krishna prescribes is the Varnashram institution, and that that's main purpose is to help one actually control the senses. So I was just wondering how that kind of fits into the discussion, and sometimes it seems that it kind of is, particularly in the ashram department, that tends to sometimes be overlooked in favor of the potency of hearing and chanting. And it seems that sometimes that's the Varnashram is looked at as more as a material sense, but we see that Prabhupada was trying to institute that as a Daivi Varnashram system. So how does the Varnashram, or specifically the ashram, the principles for regulating one's interactions in the material atmosphere, how does that contribute?
There are two Varnashram models, as I understand. One is called Asuri Varnashram, and the other is called Daivi Varnashram. Asuri Varnashram, in simple language, means the organization of a community or society according to natures. But it's called Asuri because the whole of society may not be, or is not, guided by the ultimate principle of service to Vishnu. It's just that everyone's nature is perfectly identified and they've given things to do. So Asuri Varnashram is not necessarily the best method. It's a slow method. It is still elevating within the material world. And we're reading that even elevation in the material world is risky. Then there is Daivi Varnashram. Daivi Varnashram means everyone is organized according to their natures and tendencies in service explicitly towards Krishna. That is a sure shot method. And in Daivi Varnashram, although the general services are according to nature, Prabhupada explains that any service can be done by anyone. Prahlad and I have been reading Mahabharata. There's a story of, for example, the story of Drona and Drupada. No, in fact, actually the story of Maharaj Yayati. When Maharaj Yayati, I'll skip through the details of the story, when Maharaj Yayati was cursed by Shukracharya, that you will become old immediately. And only if your son, any of your sons will exchange your old age, then you can enjoy with Devayani. Otherwise you immediately become an old man. And he's falling from heaven actually. When he's falling from heaven, his ancestors meet him. Three or four of them meet him. And they say, "You're such a, you know, qualified person. Whatever is our piety, we'll give it to you. Please take in return. And this will help you from falling from heaven." And Maharaj Yayati says, "I'm a Kshatriya. I don't take charity." Because a Kshatriya will not do anything like taking charity. In another story, when Dronacharya sent the Pandavas to defeat Drupada, Drupada was brought in front of Drona, arrested and tied by a rope. And Dronacharya said, "I give you back the kingdom as charity." And he said, "I don't want your charity." So there are certain things Kshatriyas will do and not do. But in a Daivi Varnashram, one's not bound by that. Whatever Krishna needs, one will do. Do the needful, as Prabhupada said. However, one's general services are according to nature. So then it allows for one to interact with material energy without being or without taking too much risk. But risk one should take. Not in a foolhardy manner. I want to make it clear. We don't risk our Krishna consciousness. Never. Because in this verse it says, Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jiva Guru Krishna Prasade Paya Bhakti Lata Bija. The seed of bhakti is received after millions and millions and millions and millions of lifetimes of wandering through the universe. And by some arrangement, higher order arrangement, we come in contact with a genuine guru. And the attraction for Krishna is planted as a seed. So one should not lose that at any risk, at any cost. If it means one has to fall at someone's feet and beg for forgiveness or whatever, but not lose it. It's very valuable. So we don't take risk to the degree that we'll lose our Krishna consciousness. But we take risk to the degree that it will enhance our Krishna consciousness. That requires training and guidance. I think I've exceeded far too much the time limit. I'm sorry. Thank you very much for your kind attention. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. So 11:30 in the temple hall.